From Puebla, it's Austin, Texas. This is Stacker News Live!
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to another exciting episode of Stacker News Live with my BFF, Keon. Keon, I'm in the Gulf Coast.
Yeah. Is that considered the Gulf Coast?
Yeah.
Maybe.
Yeah, Gulf Coast.
Yeah, where else would be?
Of America now, apparently. I went over here, and I was like, I'm looking for the Gulf Coast of Mexico. And they're like, sorry, sir. That doesn't exist anymore. It's only America here. I was like, oh, interesting.
That's fun. How's the water there? Is it nice?
Dude, so all the rain that we were getting in Austin, it turns out like that made its way here last night. So when I was driving in, like there's like a causeway, like a big old bridge. It basically just goes like this and then it goes down like that. So the wind was just like, whew, like you can see it and it's just water. It was pretty dangerous. I had to drive in the middle of the bridge. And it's luckily the barriers are I mean, it's like halfway to your car, so it's not like you're not gonna fall over the bridge. But I was like, damn, this sucks. But luckily I made it over the bridge. But yeah, it was pretty intense. I was like, damn, this is crazy. It was like driving through like a 50-mile like a tropical storm, but it was like right in the midst of like a rain, sideways rain, and like winds and gusts and stuff like that. It was pretty gnarly. And then when I got out of the car, that there was some dude here, he was like, so you made it over the bridge? I was like yeah I did. Some local. Thought that was funny.
Yeah, the weather's supposed to be, I guess it's one of the reasons why there's not a lot of people living on the coast in Texas relative to like California or other places. It's because the weather can be pretty intense, but I like intense weather. I don't know. I don't know why.
Yeah, it was definitely something I had forgotten. I didn't realize how intense that is. I guess I just forgot. It's been a while. Got used to, you know, Central Texas weather. How was your week?
It's great. There's Bitcoin Plus going on here. Mempool mining pools, which is like my favorite. It's like my favorite thing in Bitcoin is stuff like this. I think of mempools and mining pools sort of as like a layer two of Bitcoin, or it's kind of like I call it incentive layering, where you have to think about Bitcoin's incentives and the incentives of this new system on top of it. And so I find it really cool and really fascinating. So I've been pretty much there for the past 2 days, like watching as many of the talks that I can. And there's lots of cool people, a lot of technical people, Luke Dasher, Lop, Shinobi. I actually met Shinobi, or introduced myself to Shinobi for the first time, which was cool, just by chance talking to Tidwell. Who else was there? Anyway, just lots of cool people. The Op Return debate kind of cool. It kind of cooled down with everyone in person. They kind of got to know really what people were talking about. And I don't know, a lot of great talks. My favorite talk was from Dusty, who gave a talk on a second layer mempool, where we have another mempool. You can do things like, it's like a mempool dedicated to like coin joins, where you basically have like a separate mempool that you'd run, and you basically combine your transactions with other people's transactions and aggregate them together. It's like in an idea stage, but I thought it was cool. And like no one was there for that talk. It was like me and like five other people. But
yeah,
that was like maybe one of my favorite things. Great time though.
That sounds awesome. That sounds
it
great.
It was awesome.
Was there anything memorable that you saw?
Memorable? I mean, the Dusty talk was great. As far as like shocking or surprising things, really not. I don't know. Not really. Not much. I mean, there, you know, I got to learn about Braid Pool, which it's like a decentralized mining pool, which is pretty cool. I know last night at the debate, Nifty wore like an Amish lady's costume for the debate with Lop, where she's arguing for ossification, which I imagine is memorable to many people. I think the whole thing, I don't think I went to one talk where I wasn't super happy to be there. I got to see Scott from BitAx gave a presentation about making your own bit axes, which is, I guess, they disassemble, they buy miners from, and then they disassemble them, take them apart. They have like 20 ASICs in them, and they take the ASICs out and then put them on a bit ax. So you're getting this like recycle, a bit ax is like sort of like a recycled miner in a way. I don't know, just lots of cool stuff, real stuff going on in Bitcoin.
That's cool. We got a solo Satoshi there. Me and EK tried getting it working, but I don't know. I guess it's dead on arrival. I think somebody posted. Somebody posted some fire sale on Stacker News over the weekend. It came fast. It like came within like 2 days. It was awesome. But like we got it set up and then it doesn't work. This is why I don't buy things. Like, this is why I like wait and see on things. But I was like, what's the worst that could happen? But yeah, we bought one and it didn't work. So I was like, well. But
that's a bummer. They have them they're selling them at the conference, and the solo Satoshi guy is at the conference.
I look at it more like it's always like 50-50 with those things, like where you like. I don't know. I feel like with the Bitcoin hardware stuff, unless it's like someone you know and like it's a... I feel like Kaboom Rex does a really good job. You know what I mean? Like, unless it's somebody you know, like Alex or some of those guys, Nick, like, and you know it's a trusted brand, and then, like, you know it's going to work. I mean, I'm not trying to call them out or anything. It's just, like, one of those things where it's, like, yeah. But it's always a bummer when it gets shipped and it doesn't work, but... It could be my fault. We're just too dumb to set it up. But anyways,
it might. I'm sure there are duds. They make these things in the United States. Like, you know, it's just like dudes. Again, it's like a recycled miner.
Yeah,
that they're totally. Like making in their basement.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. Either way, I'm glad I can contribute to the project. Enjoy the sats. let me see. So we're gonna jump into our show. If you've never seen this crazy show before, it's called Stacker News Live. We have a YouTube channel. Look, we have 361 subscribers now, Keon. Can you believe it?
I think that's lower.
No, it's more. We had like 300 and we finally broke 360, which is crazy because we've been stuck at 355 for like over a year. We finally broke 360. And I think it's because of all the op return stuff. So we had like a couple of videos with over 100 views last week, and then Wumble keeps punching these out. So yeah, if you guys haven't checked it out, hit subscribe. It's free, doesn't cost anything. You literally just hit the button that says subscribe and it shows up every week. Hit the bell. If you don't want to watch the 2-hour show, hour and a half show, you can watch the clips. And every week Wumble posts like 4 to 5 clips and gets the best stuff, and then you can watch it. Cool. And then also, we're going to jump into the top 5 stories. I started doing a pre-show meeting every week, so we'll cover all the stories here. You can check out every week what we have in the top 5, my picks, Keon's picks, and then y'all's picks. Try to be more organized. So let's jump into the top 5 stories here on Stacker.News. We're going to start at number 5. Number 5... top story is actually, let me make sure I got this right. Let me go to my notes. Yeah, number. See how I have notes now, Keon. See how that works. Number 5 top.
Wow, story. Look at how that works.
Look how professional I am now. Number 5 top story is 2 ways to buy gasoline in Venezuela. This is from B57 May 3rd Econ Territory. 27 comments, 1734 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so B57 who I believe is originally from Venezuela, but has relocated to Peru, but has found themselves back in Venezuela, you know, for probably for visiting family or something, has been reporting on, you know, things that are going on in Venezuela. We're all kind of interested in what's going on there economically. It's kind of hard to get news out of South America in English oftentimes. And so especially, you know, news like this. So Beef relays to us how you buy gasoline in Venezuela. And apparently there are two different ways. You can buy a liter for 50 cents, half a dollar, basically. You can buy a liter of gasoline. I don't know how many liters there are in a gallon, but I guess there are a few, which is pretty cheap gas. But Venezuela actually has a lot of oil production. It's one of the things that makes them such a ripe target for international meddling. But very cheap gas that you can buy. But in addition to that way of buying gas, you can get subsidized gas, which is basically free. Only you have to like wait in line, and they have like a convoluted system by which they give you this free gas, and it's you're assigned a day based on your license plate number. So if your license plate ends on a 1 or 2, you can get your free gas on Mondays. And then Tuesdays were 3 and 4, and Wednesdays were 5 and 6. And apparently they only have so many spots per day, depending on the municipality. And so you have to line up at like 2 a.m. to get your free gas. And of course, the whole system is prone to abuse, like people filling up their car and then reselling the gas. Or taking a place in line, kind of like if you remember with the iPhones, and then selling their place in line to other people, things like that. But I thought that was really interesting. I didn't know this was.
Yeah, I had no idea this was taking place. This is in Venezuela, you said?
Yep.
Wow, that's crazy. Is it because there's just not enough gasoline? Is that why they're doing it, or is it because there's? Do we know why?
Economic conditions in Venezuela are really bad because they have rampant inflation. Mm. And then, you know, they have Maduro, the dictator, is kind of like a socialist dictator who was, we had quite a bit of reporting on it, but they were, they kind of lock things down after the last election where they were supposed to lose. And then they, you know, somehow magically won in a landslide. And then the whole international community did not recognize Maduro's democratic win. But it appears that he still remains in power, and I haven't really heard much about it. But in general, they've been having economic problems for a very long time. And they're socialists, or their government is socialist. And so these are kind of the things that happen.
Yeah, this is wild. The top comment was from Villa Wolf. He said, "Very well explained. I have an acquaintance who owns 2 vehicles and takes advantage of the fuel ticket system to fill up with heavy subsidized gasoline. Then he sells it by the liter at market price. I once told him, you complain about the government, but from what I see, you've got a business going with subsidized gas. Unfortunately, that's how the cycle keeps feeding itself." OP said, "That's right. Just like many people do, some do it because they don't have a job and they take advantage of that to at least make some money." Undisciplined said, "Thanks for sharing. These systems operate in parallel and are both legal, as in the same gas station will accept cash and tickets and you go to different places for each. It's a great example of how perverse and distorted non-price rationing mechanisms are." It's weird. Do you remember that gas crisis that we had in Austin? Like, or no, you weren't here yet, but like, we had one in, I want to say like in 2015 or 2016, where there was just like no gas. Or did you guys have that in California too, where there was just like no gas for like a week or something?
I've never been a driver, so.
Okay. Well, they had one in Austin. And like literally everybody put gas like on a Tuesday, and by like middle of the week there was just like no gas whatsoever. And dude, that was the only time I ever saw where it was just like, it was kind of like that where you saw people just like lined up to put gas, and it went on till like Sunday, and then finally like the next day, Monday, the people had gas. But it was exactly like that. It was just like no holds bar, like the worst in people. It's weird because gasoline's the only thing I've noticed that gets people to their, you see the worst in them, like gasoline. You don't see that with water though, surprisingly. Like people share water, but like gasoline though, for some reason.
Well, I mean, we have people share water because they have a lot of it. I mean, because it's plentiful. I don't think we've ever had like a lot of water scarcity.
Yeah.
We do have these weird peaks and valleys in oil availability though.
Yeah. It's kind of what the whole Mad Max future is about with the gasoline. I mean, it makes people turn into all sorts of craziness. Pretty wild stuff. It's just
energy. Yeah, energy is really important to human flourishing at this stage, like industrial human flourishing. And we don't deal with scarcity super well. You know, we have to figure out, we need them to be abundant. Otherwise we like return to our base selves.
Do you ever see those videos of that guy who said he invented like zero point energy? Do you ever see that stuff?
I think I've heard about zero point energy, where it's like harvesting the energy of the vacuum of space or something like that, but you know, like space and atoms or something.
Do you think we'll see that in our lifetime or no?
I don't really know if that's much of a thing, or how much of a thing it is. I mean, it's possible that scientists are just sort of ignoring it or not paying too much attention to it, and there actually is real stuff there. But I would guess there are energy sources and things about physical reality that would provide us with more efficient, better energy that we haven't found yet. And so I can imagine a world, like if we ever get, you know, zero point energy excluded, if we ever get something like fusion reactors working well, and energy just becomes so like practically free because it's so cheap. I think it'd be a weird world. I'm not sure. A lot of people think it'd be like doomsday. It'd be like another version of Mad Max, but in some other way. But I don't think it would be. I think it would be good.
I think it would be good. I think it would be good. I think it would free us up to do harder tasks, like to solve harder problems. Yeah. Kind of like what ChatGPT is doing. Do you know what I mean? It would just like level us up to do even harder things. Make us more efficient. Cool.
Absolutely.
Great post. Let's jump into the number four top story is Ultimate Guide to Lightning Routing and Fee Management. This is from Javier, May 6th, Bitcoin Territory. This is 27 comments, 20,000 sats. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, Javier gives a pretty detailed and I would say like comprehensive guide to practical node running. And they give a bunch of tips and some details from them running their own node, like how much revenue they're earning and how much liquidity they have deployed. And then I think there's roughly five steps here, which are basically, you know, run on a good machine. You need a good machine these days. It can't be a Raspberry Pi anymore. You can't expect to do very well on a Raspberry Pi anymore. And then he has some details about the nodes that you connect to. Interestingly, he gives advice that contradicts the other advice I've heard, which is he says you should have 50 channels, 50 smaller channels rather than five very large channels. I've heard elsewhere that you actually want fewer larger channels, but their advice is to get many smaller channels, although he says that it shouldn't be too small. You should have at minimum a 500k sats in a channel, but he says you should put them in 50 channels. So you have to have a lot of sats to follow this advice to the T. But it has great, I think, good advice. And I think that's good advice. And then he also explains liquidity and how that works. And you should understand that and how that affects maybe your routing potential. And then gets on to how you might want to manage fees. And he says that you should be probably monitoring your node at least once a day, manually. And you should set up some kind of automatic fee management, something that either rebalances your liquidity and also assigns fees to routes that where liquidity is getting drained fast. And that'll improve your economic efficiency of the Bitcoin you've allocated to your node. Anyway, it's a detailed yet high level guide to kind of routing. Be a great resource if someone wants to do some routing. Yeah, I thought it was great.
What's the PPM stand for, Keon? Is that payments per something, or what is that? He has like.
It's parts per million.
What does that mean? Parts per million, 69 parts per million, 68 parts per million.
Yeah. So, it's basically like if I put 1 million drops of water in a cup, and then 68 drops of it are blue, that's 68 parts per million. So there's a million total drops, but 68 drops of that water are colored blue. 68 drops in that water are blue, and the rest of them are clear. And that's basically what it means. It's like it's a way of expressing a potentially a very low percentage, basically. Yeah, if that makes sense.
And why is that important when it comes to profits and revenue?
It's just the way that the protocol expresses routing fees is in parts per million. So if you say something like you want 50,000 50,000 per million, 50,000 sats, 50 something like, if you want 50,000 parts per million on a route, that means you basically want to collect 5% of everything that you route through there.
Oh, okay.
That's yeah. So it allows you to have very, very high. You express it as a number without a fraction or a decimal, but it allows you to express very, very small percentages. So you can take a very low fee, on a route, and so it gives you like very high precision of expressing the fees that you want to take on a route.
Right. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. It's very detailed.
Yeah. It's still very technical to run a node. I was talking about this with someone at the conference, and I was saying that I think the dream is that people who have Bitcoin at some point in the future can plug in a device, sort of like a Bitcoin miner, you know, send their Bitcoin to an address on the device, and it serves as a routing node that makes them a little bit of money. And it's basically like a miner. It's as like simple as a miner. It just, you just plug it in. You do a few things with, you know, to express related to Bitcoin, but you don't have to think about this kind of stuff. This stuff is pretty complicated. A lot of people aren't going to be able to do it. Very technical.
So it's like an automated Phoenix server or something or like a Phoenix node or something that just runs.
Yeah, but even more automated. But Phoenix D is probably the closest thing. And Phoenix D isn't for routing, though. You're not making money. Yeah, Phoenix D is more so you want to participate in the network and receive money, send money.
Okay.
You don't mind having a reliance on Async's LSP, but you're not earning. Your Phoenix D is not a routing node, as far as I understand. You can't use it like a routing node.
Right. Okay. So this would be something that would make you yield. You money then. Yield, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. Yield on your Bitcoin. Have a little, you know, you have some Bitcoin, you're in the future, maybe you're a retired Bitcoiner and you don't have any income, but you also, you know, you still have to buy food. You want to be able to pay for your food. You don't want to spend your Bitcoin. You would rather make new Bitcoin that you can spend on your food. In the future, maybe you have, you run a routing node, you deploy a little bit of your Bitcoin to it, make 1%, 2% a year on, man, on operating that node.
Yeah. That sounds amazing.
Yeah.
That sounds really good, actually.
Yeah, hopefully that's the future. If Lightning is going to work, if Lightning is going to succeed, that's probably the future.
We have the top comment from Javier. EOP said, he had an appendix A, liquidity draining channels. What was this part, Keon? Or I guess he pinned it too.
Oh, yeah. I don't think I went through this. I don't think I went through this pinned comment. But I'm not sure. Sounds like he has a few different appendices here. But it looks like just elaborates more on certain details that are in the original post. Okay.
Second top comment was from Darthcoin. Darthcoin says, the house is burning and the old woman is combing her hair. People are debating the op return war, and you are worried that some new noobs, node runners, don't know how to run properly Lightning nodes. And then he shows posts. Okay. Yeah, pretty good stuff. Darthcoin being Darth. Good one, Javier. This is great stuff. This is the kind of stuff that you can't really get anywhere else but Stacker News. I always say, like, these are the kind of posts that make Stacker News like the best place on the planet, right? I mean, I was using ChatGPT this week, and I had a question about Lightning. And what I typically do is I just typically yell out to the lab, and somebody will answer it. But this time I was like, you know what? I'm gonna be a good person and just like look it up. And guess where it was searching? It was searching Stacker News. Yeah.
Hey.
Yeah, I know. I took a screenshot of it too. I'll post it in the saloon later. But yeah, I was like really shocked by that. I was like, oh crap, it's actually searching Stacker News. But this is the kind of stuff where like you can't get it anywhere else. Like maybe GitHub, maybe, but these are like firsthand experiences that I think what makes Stacker News really great.
Yeah, I had a similar experience where I was at the conference. I wanted to ask Scott from BitAx a question about ASICs and the new chips he might put in them. And I knew that there were US manufacturers trying to make chips, but I needed to know who they were so I could ask my question properly. And so I went and I searched on Stacker News for like the list, or there were a few posts where I constructed a list of who is manufacturing ASICs from, but I don't know how I would have done that otherwise, but I'm also like used to Stacker News, so it's a little bit easier for me. But I am finding like our back catalog is very useful.
It's really cool, dude. It's really cool. It's like, you know, now that you're doing it for 4 or 5 years now at this point, it's really cool seeing it. I mean, like, I think that's one of the cool things about having a company that long now is like, you get to really reap the fruit of all the labor that you put into it. I see that time and time and again with Plub Lab, like all the videos and all the workshops that we've done. Like I'm so grateful that we did all that, because now we have like a back catalog of all that stuff, and it's so wonderful. It's awesome. Yeah.
Heck yeah.
Cool. So let's jump into the number three top story of the week. It's private package delivery. This is from John Hoddle, Privacy Territory, May 2nd, 20 comments, 2,566 sets. Keon, what's this?
Yeah. So John was buying some miners off of Twitter, and he, you know, he saw some guy who was selling old S9s and, you know, wanted to get them because John makes these lamps out of old S9s. I have one in my office. I got one. And they're really cool. But he basically empties out an S9 and puts a bulb in it. But he wanted to buy these S9s for the enclosure to make these lamps. But it would require him giving his address to a total stranger on Twitter. And so he looked into how he might do that more privately. And I guess you can go to a UPS store, which are in most towns and cities now, and you can ask them if they do this, but I think most of them do. You can just get your packages delivered directly to the UPS store, and then you can pick it up. He says that they charge a 5-day holding fee, but maybe you can get it for free if you just same day kind of go in and get it. But I think it's a pretty cool way to not have to like dox your home address with in the world now where everything is leaked all the time. Be nice not to have that in a database somewhere. And Kyle, the Bitcoin bum, used to do this. He lived in a van and he would get all of his mail delivered
to a hotel.
The UPS store.
To a hotel. Yeah,
or a hotel. Well, it was a UPS store in a hotel, I think.
He used to do it at a hotel, didn't he?
I think it was a UPS store in that hotel.
Oh, I thought he had did it at a hotel. I didn't know he did it at a UPS store. Oh, yeah. That was the same place? Oh, yeah, I guess that makes sense. Oh, I thought he just had it at a UPS or at the hotel. I guess that makes sense.
Yeah, it was a UPS store, and it's sort of like a P.O. box, but for, you know, things that are potentially really big. And so that's how I knew about that, but I didn't realize you could get one-off packages.
Oh yeah, I didn't know about that. I used to have a P.O. box like at the postal service, and then you can put like somebody else's address at the postal service. You don't have to put your own address.
Yeah, Stacker News has a P.O. box.
Yeah, you don't have to put your own address there. There's still ways to do it. So yeah, that's pretty cool. What did Stacker say? Nichiro said, do they verify your own phone number written on the box by calling or texting you? Or is there more to be on that? They literally didn't verify anything, but I think that's because I picked it up so fast. Even pointed to the box that said John on it, had my phone number written on it. We are also Tish. I had no idea this was possible, but this is a potential game changer, especially if you can get some sort of temp burner phone number to help dissociate yourself from it. Thank you for sharing. John Hono said, yeah, I was skeptical if it would work, but I took the chance and it was worth it. I used my Google voice number, so my personal number didn't get shown. It's weird, too, because, like, I don't know if you ever read that. Do you know who Kevin Mitnick is?
No.
You don't know who Kevin Mitnick is? He was, like, no. He went to jail for, like, 20 years or 15 years or 10 years or whatever because he used to do a lot of social engineering hacks or whatever. But his book, he got out of prison. Eventually, and then he started working with like the deep state, and then he wrote a book about like how to socially engineer people, and he did the book is fascinating. I haven't read it in a really long time, but he talks about how he would socially engineer people to give him like information or to bypass security and all this kind of stuff. It's a really fascinating book, but I would say though is like, if you wanted to like do stuff like this, that's the book to read, because there's ways to go about like kind of like that movie. Did you ever see that movie Catch Me If You Can, where like the guy just like he gets away with a lot of things just because he's just a really smooth talker, and like a lot of the stuff that you would normally have to do like just gets pushed aside just because of the guy's really impressionable. Yeah. There's a lot of people who do that.
Oh, yeah. Lots of con artists out there in the world.
Yeah.
I think I might have... The guy... I haven't read that guy's book, but he might have been on Lex Friedman's podcast once.
Kevin Mitnick?
Yeah, I think. Yeah. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Let's jump into number two top story. Conversation with a boomer buddy. This is from Siggy47. Oh, I'm sorry. No, hang on. This is the wrong one. Let me go back. Conversation with a boomer buddy. Oh, hang on. Why am I going back? Oh, I copied it twice. I'm sorry, Siggy. Hang on. Let me go to this one here. This is when my notes go bad. 48 comments, 2,219 sats, Bitcoin territory, May 6th. Keon, what's this?
Yeah, so Siggy, it sounds like one of Siggy's friends is sick, but on the bright side, it brought together him and two of his buddies to visit his sick friend and say their goodbyes. And so he got to talking about one of his friends, got to talking to them about Bitcoin. And Siggy didn't bring it up, because it's not really the time or place, but he was just having, sort of small talk with his friend. And they were talking about politics and RFK Jr. and stuff. And then his buddy brought up that he owns Bitcoin and that he wouldn't sell it. He would sell everything in his portfolio except Bitcoin. And Siggy was, interested. And he asked his friend what price he bought Bitcoin at, and he said $78. And Siggy is aghast. $78, that's a very low Bitcoin price. He must be an OG. My friend's been an OG all this time, and I didn't know it. And then his friend said he bought it 6 months ago. So it turns out his friend actually bought the ETF. He didn't buy real Bitcoin. Bitcoin popped up in Siggy's life, outside of the Bitcoin community. And that's what he wrote about here.
Yeah. What did you think about this post, Keon?
I suspect 90% of people who have exposure to Bitcoin, maybe more than 90%, will probably have exposure through ETFs or other financial, master strategy. What are there, like five Bitcoin holding companies now? I think there was another one announced yesterday from David Bailey, runs Bitcoin Magazine. He started one too. And then there was a day before that, there was a merger of some company and Strive asked, I don't even know anymore. It's hard to keep track of them, but, yeah. Anyway, there'll be tons of paper Bitcoin. I don't think the real asset is going to see much light of day, except among people who really get it. And maybe to the positive side, maybe this is what brings people to real Bitcoin stuff, is having the price exposure and then wondering. Then they begin wondering about the actual asset. And unlike gold, which most people hold in paper, even people who are huge gold bulls, Bitcoin is relatively easy to secure and self custody. So maybe this actually leads to people having really owning Bitcoin.
Yeah, and when I read this, I was really intrigued by the beginning part. I was like, oh wow, this is sounds like a really deep, Siggy story. It was short and quick, but it was a really deep conversation. And then the way it ended was just gosh, really hit me in the heart. Obviously Siggy's not going to say anything right then and there. I mean, you kind of have to read the room. And there was one comment where somebody said why didn't you say something? I forget what it was. Somebody said something why didn't you say something? And the guy was like, we were all literally standing around, in the on his deathbed. So hopefully Siggy will, catch up with that guy later, for a lunch or something, and then in a roundabout way, have that conversation with them. But it's a tough one, man. Have you ever been in a situation like that where, maybe not with Bitcoin, but where you're having a conversation with somebody and then they say something and you're like, oh crap, they don't know. And then what do you do? Have you ever been in that situation before?
Probably. I can't recall any in particular, but I would guess that depending on the context, you either tell them what's going on or not. I'm usually the guy to tell someone that their fly is down or something like that. So I don't. So maybe I would say something regardless. But in this, the problem with pitching like Bitcoin self-custody is that it's, you know, you're basically if you pitch someone Bitcoin self-custody, you're obligating yourself to be like their tech support for, you know, who knows how long. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's tricky. So he would be obligated to give him a whole spiel that is totally inappropriate versus, you know, something like telling someone their fly is down. It's relatively easy and quick.
Yeah.
Painless.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Yeah, it was a good quick top story. Yeah, I just think it's just yeah, this whole kind of like paper Bitcoin thing has just gotten out of hand, man. I mean, the Stackers know how I feel about it, but it's just yeah, it's just you're just seeing the real sharks in Bitcoin really come out now. I think Strike is now doing like loans now. I don't know if you saw that.
Yeah, that's, the rehypothecation stuff.
That's
yeah.
Pretty disgusting. Yeah, it's pretty bad now, man. It's pretty bad.
I just can't believe they're rehypothecating. I thought that was like I thought that was something we all knew was bad. Like okay, you're doing a lot of paper magic stuff, cool. But we know that like this fractional debt reserve stuff is like with Bitcoin doesn't work out in the long run. Well,
I don't know. Like, I don't have a Strike account. I never did, but like, I don't know if I would be comfortable having a Strike account now. imagine if you have a Strike account and then like you see all these loan stuff. Like, dude, I would be like exiting stage left, bro. I would not be comfortable trusting my exchange doing that. I mean, I don't know. That's just me, but it's wild to think all the people that were like the outstanding Bitcoiners just go make a hard right. It's weird, dude. It's the weirdest thing. And yeah, it's just so strange, man. I feel like we've entered like a twilight zone and it's all because I know the stage that we're at is like the most important stage right now here in 2025, you know, but it's just like it's just so weird, dude. It's so weird. I don't know. I can talk about it for hours.
It is weird watching people change like that. they have principles that they were pretending that they're sort of pretending to have. That's weird to notice because it just makes you suspicious of anyone who claims to have a principle or a value system. But
there was
go ahead.
I was just gonna say that there was a story Mandrake told me a long time ago about Roger Ver and about how like one day Roger was friends with him and like because he used to work with them and all the stuff, and then the next day Roger was this completely different person and he had changed completely. And I remember thinking, I was like, how does that happen? Like, how does one day one person become something different and all the stuff? And I remember Mandrake's face was when he was telling us this story, I remember seeing his face and it was almost like a sort of sadness he had, like he had lost a friend. And I remember thinking like at the time, I was like, wow, like that, you could tell that really hurt him. And I was a young Bitcoiner then. I had no idea like, you know, like what that guy meant to him or like what he saw, but you could tell they were friends and like, he had meant something to them at the time. Now I kind of understand like what that actually looks like. Like now I understand what that actually, like how that actually happens in the Bitcoin space. And now seeing it happen, it's just kind of like, it's just sad, dude. It's just sad seeing people change. It's just sad seeing people that you really, really had you know, kind of believed that they had the right kind of principles in place. But I guess money really does get the best of people.
Yeah, and I don't think we're necessarily even talking about strikes specifically, because I'm actually not super familiar with their loan product or what they're doing. Yeah. But I have seen on other, you know, X people talking about their terms specifying that they rehypothecate, which strikes me as odd. So I haven't verified this. It strikes me as odd though, because they have you over collateralized, like most Bitcoin loans, where you have to put, if you want to say take out a Bitcoin and fiat, you have to give them 2 Bitcoin, I think is, I don't know what the LTV is. It's something like that. It's something like you give them 2 Bitcoin, they give you a Bitcoin worth of fiat, $100,000 or whatever the price is now. And that, you know, so why rehypothecate? Why do anything else with that? What else is there to do with the Bitcoin other than let it sit there and get, like, where are you going to make more money? Are you going to go trade treasuries or what is there to do with that?
We're pushing it all into Tether. We're pushing it all into Tether.
Yeah, where does it go?
Dude, we know exactly where it's going, man. Come on. Like, that's why I'm saying, like, like you've already shown one side of you and then you've shown another side and now you're doing this. It's like, I mean, I don't even have to listen to you anymore. I'm just watching what you're doing now. Like Bitcoiners are like not are the smartest people in the world. And so, yeah, it sucks because they're going to get all the people that are like new to the space. So anyways,
well, maybe it'll work. Maybe this will be the one time it works. So, you know, there's always that odd chance that rehypothecation won't blow up.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I just never seen that before. Let's jump into the number one top story of the week. It's quick questions about OpRetuRn. Quick answers here. This is a Prism post. Bitcoin territory, May 4th, from Tidwell, 200 comments, 27,000 sats, all or half of it, or 51% of it, was forwarded to merch. I think this is the most commented post we ever had in the number one spot, to be honest. Keon, maybe. What's this?
Yeah, I don't know if it's the most we've ever had in the number one spot. It's certainly like
most one commented? Of the... I think so. I think we capped at 165. I keep track of this in my head. I think 165 is the most comments we ever had in the number one post.
Okay. Well, I don't know how to go back and look at number one post. It's like top 10, I think, most comments of any post. So a lot of comments, and you know, most of them is merch, like very patiently answering every possible question that comes across this thread about OpRetuRn. This thread is dedicated toward answering people's questions about OpRetuRn. And so Tidwell organized it. He had a bunch of questions about OpRetuRn that he wanted to ask Merch, and I guess he needed a place to ask them. So they decided to do it on Stacker News. So Tidwell created this post, put all of his questions in the post, and then Merch goes through and asks them. And then anyone else is welcome to come along and ask follow-up questions or ask their own questions in here, and Merch answers them. And it's a fantastic resource if you're concerned about OpRetuRn and what's actually going on. You can really hear in great detail what is actually going on and what's at stake. And Merch is probably one of the most patient people in Bitcoin, also one of the most knowledgeable people in Bitcoin, and makes himself super available to help. He's been an admin of the Bitcoin Stack Exchange and loves answering questions well and helping educate people. He taught me a lot of what I know about Bitcoin through Chaincode Labs. I mad respect for Merch, and he, you know, continues to do a great job here. He hasn't lost it. Anyway, that's mostly what this thread is about, is people asking questions about OpRetuRn and and merch answering them. And if anyone isn't familiar with OpReturn and what's going on with OpReturn, is there was a PR submitted to the Bitcoin Core repo by Peter Todd, I believe, where it removed the standardness rule for OpReturn. I believe it was limited to 80 bytes, like basically most, which means most Bitcoin nodes would not relay transactions that had OpReturns in excess of 80 bytes. And this PR would remove that limit and allow an OpReturn of, I believe, not arbitrary length, but whatever the consensus rules are for OpReturns. So no special treatment for OpReturns is basically what this PR did. And it basically makes the mempool policy exactly the same as Bitcoin consensus. So things that are valid in blocks. And yeah, this upset a faction of Bitcoiners who hate things like OpReturn and any, you know, hate things that aren't explicitly financial in Bitcoin blocks. And they saw this sort of as an attack or a signal from Bitcoin Core that they want more arbitrary data in Bitcoin. But I think that's far from the case. I think it's on some level quite more complex than that, but on another level is also pretty simple. And I don't think this is even that dramatic of a thing. I don't think it matters that much. I've been describing this mostly as like a fire drill where we're all sort of like testing whether we can disagree and get along and whether people are paying attention and what, you know, where people stand. It's more like a test than it is anything of real consequence itself. And anyway, there's like a lot here. There's a lot of great content out there now, but this thread will give you a great handle on Bitcoin Core's point of view on it and their understanding of the opposition to this change. That's the thread.
Yeah. I mean, we covered a lot of it last week. It was so fresh last week. I mean, it was fresh in everybody's mind. And just last week, dude, you should have saw it, dude. Like, everybody in the lab was just, like, up in arms. And then, they were all trying to figure it out. And then we're right next to the commons. So we had people like Parker coming over trying to get the guys to answer questions for him. And then they were going back and forth. And then for me, I was just kind of like, you know, I'm just over it, dude. You know, just because it's all stuff that's just like, you know, because like for me these days, like I'm focused more on founder stuff and like, you know, and more on the business side of things about Bitcoin than on kind of the dev stuff, you know, to be honest. It doesn't mean that I don't care. It's just more, it's more on the peripheral side of my viewpoint and stuff. And so for me, it's just like, it's just not at the top of my, it's the stuff that doesn't affect me. I think the stuff that actually does affect me is more like the Tether stuff, the stuff that we were just talking about in the last post. It's the rehypothecation, all that stuff actually affects my business more so than this kind of stuff, I would say. I don't know. I don't know. What are your thoughts on it, Keon? I mean, how do you feel about all this stuff? I don't know. Have you been paying attention to it? I know you were on vacation last week. How do you feel about it?
I think in general, I agree with the reasoning of the Bitcoin Core team and their justifications for it, which are basically removing this OpReturn limit will prevent people from causing more damage by getting around the OpReturn limit. And it also makes the standardness rule or the mempool policy for OpReturn limits symmetrical or congruent with the consensus rules, meaning that it makes things simpler because it like removes rules that aren't really doing much good. And in fact, in some cases, which was the motivation for the PR, they're actually doing harm. They're causing people to store data in a more hazardous way to node runners. And so this, in some cases, will prevent that from happening. And so that's better. And on a, in a code maintenance way, it's better to not have code that isn't really used or useful. There are a number of points that you can make on why this is good. You know, why this is bad from the perspective of people like Luke Dasher and the Knots team seems to be primarily that this kind of suggests that they think it suggests to people that Bitcoin is for arbitrary data storage and kind of encourages it. And, you know, sort of a slippery slope will begin allowing more and more of this kind of stuff now that it's in there and it'll be used more. And we sort of need to put our foot down, even if it's going to happen anyway, we need to be like socially signaling, declaring that we don't want this stuff by having these limits on it. And even if we have evidence that that's ineffective and actually has like first and second order consequences that are even worse than what we're trying to prevent, it doesn't matter. We need to put our foot down. We need to shout at people storing data. So in general, I'm as far as this issue is concerned, I think this change is good. I like it. I think it's the right thing to do. I heard a great perspective from the Braidpool developer. I forget his name exactly, but you know, really smart guy. And he said in either case, this is a bad idea. He's like, you know, if we were adding this filter for the first time, it's a bad idea. Adding filters is bad because it creates sort of regulatory risk. Because if we're suggesting that we can filter things from Bitcoin transactions, it invites a regulator to come and say, you should filter these OFAC addresses. You should filter this. You should filter that. And so even suggesting we have the power to filter when we really don't, it's ineffective. But even just like suggesting out into the world that we have the ability to filter invites regulators. And then on the other side, he said, removing this limit, in, you know, does have this consequence of allowing these non-monetary use cases to operate a little more efficiently in some, at least in a kind of conceptual way on Bitcoin. And that's bad too. And so he said, you know, it's kind of a dilemma. There's actually no one of these decisions is actually better. And his argument is because we're in this dilemma, not one of them is clearly better. He's like, we should just keep it as it is. And, you know, we shouldn't be fighting over this. It's a distraction, et cetera. And so I thought that was a great perspective. So you have like, you kind of have yes, no, and then you have this perspective, which is,
actually, that's probably the smartest path, right? I love that. It's probably better just to not to do anything. When you don't have consensus, it's best not to do anything.
You're not going to have consensus for a lot of this stuff. And the nice thing about the mempool policy stuff is you can run an alternative set of mempool policies and still be in consensus with the chain. So you can run knots. You know, have even more strict op return limits and other, you know, a variety of other limits that Luke Dasher showed off at the conference this week. And you can run knots and still be in consensus with everyone running Bitcoin Core. And then you can also on the other side, you can run another implementation with a different mempool policy that Peter Todd has implemented called Libra Relay, which, you know, basically has very liberal standardness rules and helps things like this get to miners. But anyway, what's nice about this is like there's a fair, it's like about the level of complexity is very low, but it's still high enough to create a lot of interesting discussion. And that's why I feel like it's really gone viral and everyone wants to talk about it.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm kind of through with it at this
point. Yeah, I think most people are. I think
I'm through with it. Too. I mean, I don't really, I don't really care either or, to be honest. Like, I've always said, like, the devs need to figure it out. Like, just figure it out. I mean, we all have our own lanes that we work in individually. So they need to figure it out. Or the devs and the miners, I guess, or whoever charge of all that stuff. I thought this was interesting, though. I don't know if you saw this, but NBK was taking shots at you. So Tidwell posted this on Twitter. EK told me about this. So Tidwell was posted that he's doing a... let me see if this shows up. Yeah, he posted that he was doing a post, because this post went like pretty crazy with all the comments and stuff. He said, hey, I'm doing this post on Stacker News. If anybody wants to come check it out. This was like on Sunday evening. And then NBK comes in and goes, do it on Noster. And then Tidwell says, Stacker cross post. Do you still cross post? You can still cross post from Stacker News, right? And then so that was it, right? And then I think almost immediately, here, let me go back here, where was it at? Almost immediately NBK goes, don't post on walled gardens. He said he called Stacker News a walled garden, Keon. And then Tidwell says, by the way, for what it's worth, I think you're right, and I love Noster. And then Tidwell stood up for you. He goes, let's define walled garden. You don't even need a login to view and post on Stacker News, because you can post as a non. He goes, but for X, for instance, and obviously a Noster Relay can enforce fee structures, Stacker News is fine on the spectrum walled garden. And he goes, and then NBK says, I had so much hope for you, Tidwell. Disappoint you must. And then Tidwell keeps going back at him and he goes, if you want to explain what you mean or your definition of a walled garden, I'm all ears, but you lost me. I'm serious. And then NBK says, you can't comment without an account. If they go away, the article goes away. It has a sysadmin. And then Tidwell says, you can post and comment as a non without an account. I think I get your point, though, but I challenge you to think about walled gardens in more than just the aspect of how decentrally centralized controlled it is. Openness and interoperability are two big ones to also consider. So I don't think NBK understands what a walled garden is, Keon.
I don't think to be honest, I've had a few discussions with NBK. He's so opinionated and spends so much time on X, which is, you know, I mean, if Stacker News is a walled garden, X is a walled garden, and he's maybe one of the most active people in that walled garden that I can think of in Bitcoin. I don't know of anyone else who tweets more than he does.
Is it possible he thinks X is not a walled garden, though?
I think that was. I think he does think about it as a walled garden, but
doesn't. Do you think he thinks Twitter? But does he think Twitter is not a walled garden because it doesn't? It won't go away.
No, I would guess if you asked him, he would say Twitter is a walled garden. I would say that's what he would say. So he's contradicting himself, but I don't think that's really. So I think really what he means is he's trying to make a sort of disingenuous argument toward Tidwell to basically, you know, it's a really easy argument to make with Bitcoiners. Don't use this thing because it's a walled garden. Yes, I'm contradicting myself and saying this on X. It doesn't matter. All that I care about is that it changes your behavior. I don't care that I'm actually factually right or honest or whatever. I just want to change your behavior, Tidwell. And then so that's what he's doing. Yeah. Anyway.
And then the other thing was funny is because he goes, is also unlikely it will be there in a few years. So I thought that was funny because it was kind of like, I was like, what does he mean by that? Does he mean like Stacker News is going to go away? Like it's just going to go away in a few years? Is that what he's implying there?
Yep.
Is that what he's implying? So this gets me to thinking like, because he's on OpenSats, like NBK is on OpenSats. So I started thinking, I was like, NBK, if you're listening to this, just give Stacker News a grant and then it'll still be there in a few years. You see how that works? You just give Stacker News a grant, and then Stacker News will be there in a few years. So that way, when you post on Stacker News, you won't have to worry about it not being there. But I also started thinking, and I started realizing, the reason he's worried that it won't be there is because all the Nosser stuff that he gives grants to goes away in under a year. So that's why he's worried. He's just lighting up Jack's money on fire. That's all he's doing. He's just lighting up all the OpenStack grant money on fire because they go away in under a year. That's why he's thinking stuff. That's why he's thinking stuff just goes away.
Yeah, it's weird to hear people talk about Stacker News who never use Stacker News or never talk to me about Stacker News or ask anything about Stacker News. But we have more than a few years of runway. So that's one point. Another point is even when I stop working on things like and I'm not going to stop working on Stacker News, as I've said many times, it's like, I think it's my life's task, and so whether I have money to work on it or not, I'm going to keep working on it and keep it up. But the other aspect of this is that I keep the projects that I worked on in the past up. I have projects from 2015, 2016 that I used to operate, still running for the purpose of people still use them. I'm going to keep them running, even though they're not, I'm not actively working on them. I just think it doesn't matter.
The other thing is kind of weird though, and maybe this is where you start getting used to working with grants and stuff, and you forget in business, this is how businesses work for people that work with grants all the time. You have to build something called moats. And so in business, there's this thing called moats. And so you got to build a moat and you got to make this thing called revenue. And if you don't make revenue, you go out of business. So in order for Stacker News to be successful, you have to build a moat, and this moat makes businesses successful. And so you got to build a moat. Stacker News has to build a moat, but also has to still play within the ecosystem. So it can only do enough to open that moat. So it's not entirely a walled garden, but still build enough of a moat that it plays well with the rest of the ecosystem, but still has enough to build a sustainable business for itself.
Well, I want to stop you I want to stop you a little bit, because I wouldn't even call, I'm not, Stacker News isn't centralized in the way that it is because I want a moat and I need to make revenue. Stacker News is centralized in the way that it is because I haven't given time to decentralizing it. It's not out of interest of it being centralized and I'm trying to serve business needs. Although that's maybe the most obvious explanation and why someone like NVK who hasn't had a conversation with me and would think that. The main reason is we're spending a bunch of time working on the Bitcoin stuff that is weird and no one else is working on and no one gives a shit about, because they all just have given up on working on Lightning applications and are either KYC'd custodial or working on eCash, another custodial solution. And we're trying to make non-custodial stuff work well in the context of an application like Stacker News, which is a lot of stuff with Bitcoin. And that, it, you know, for the time being, it's centralized while we're working on that. We plan on making it decentralized when we can. If we lose the moat, I don't think we do. There's a moat to running a protocol well. There's a moat to providing services on a protocol better than anyone else. And that's what we intend to do, given enough time. In the meantime, we're just going to have to, people are going to misunderstand what we're doing and they're going to tell people what we're doing and what we are and what's going to happen to us. Like, they have a crystal ball and they have a huge microphone and a bunch of money from Jack Dorsey and a bunch of friends with microphones and a bunch of money from Jack Dorsey and Keon, all the power in the world.
But what I'm trying to say is though, from my perspective, there's nothing wrong with that. There's nothing wrong with building a moat. That's called building a business, man. Like, that's normal. And so I'm not speaking for you, I'm just saying I love that you stopped me and you explained that you're not doing that, and I 100% love that you did that, because I know you're not doing that, and I didn't mean to. I was just being sarcastic, but just so I can finish this point though, businesses should do that though. this is normal business building, and this is normal. This is like the restaurant down the street here does that. And then there's another Mexican restaurant down the street that's competing with them, and they're both offering the same burrito. Like, it's normal. Like, and so, like, I don't think people should be up in arms when businesses of Bitcoin do that. It's the same reason I'm sure NVK does this with people that battle his company. So that's what I'm trying to say, though. It's just kind of dumb that, like, this kind of stuff goes on, and it's just like, let Tidwell pick where he wants to get the most visibility. If you think he can get the most visibility on Stacker News, then he's going to pick Stacker News. He's not going to pick Nostr, because Nostr is not efficient for this kind of conversation, right? Like, he could have picked Abla, as whatever that place is called, but he didn't pick there. He picked Stacker News. That's it. Anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah. Do you have any final thoughts?
I think the only thing I wanted to add is, I think Tidwell chose the venue because there was a lot of spam in the GitHub thread around this change. And also, the format on Stacker News is very conducive to having these kinds of back and forth conversations, unlike other formats. And so I think that's the reason he chose Stacker News to do it, is because we have this gentle civil resistance in the form of Bitcoin payments. So it's, you know, we're doing Bitcoin stuff. And then the format's also good. And, you know, I don't think, you know, NVK, I think NVK is like one of the people who I think holds the, you know, strong opinions loosely held is kind of probably his motto. And, you know, it just lends itself to all these kind of him saying a lot of things that are, you know, sort of not great. So I just accept that for what it is. And I don't think people who are using Stacker News are not using Nostr. In fact, I would guess that most stackers use Nostr, and we probably introduced a bunch of stackers to Nostr, and a bunch of people on Nostr have found Stacker News through Nostr and use Stacker News. I don't think it's a zero. I think part of the motivation behind NVK's comments is that he views it as like a zero sum game.
Dude, all those guys do. Whereas, dude, they
if
all
Stacker
do.
News wins, then Nostr loses. If they Nostr all, they wins, all, they, that's
they
Stacker.
All, they all those old heads in Bitcoin all view it as a zero sum game. That's how they view it, dude. All those old heads.
Well, accumulating Bitcoin sort of is, so I could get how
but
that
not
might
accumulating
them
community.
With...
An accumulating community is not like that, but all those old guys do, dude. That's why it's so weird, man. Those guys are so weird. They need to find God, bro. It's so weird. Anyways, it's our turn. So basically what they did, they hit the ping pong on our side. We just slapped it back to them. Let's see if they slap it back to us. That's how that works. This is how rappers do it. The rappers will hit it to one rapper, and then the other rapper will hit it back to them, and then that's how you do it. Keep the drama going.
Yeah, I don't think we're like Nas or 50 Cent. Jay-Z or Dude, Drake 50, or anything.
50
like
Cent talks so much crap to everybody. Anyways. We're going to jump into Keon's picks of the week. The first one was money class of the day, market efficiency. You come into, what's this, Keon?
Yeah, so Joaquin Book explains to us the efficient market hypothesis. And let's see how I can sum this up well, because I actually wasn't super familiar with this on much of any level. I'd heard the term before, but I didn't know much about it. But basically it says that you can't know that a price, when you make a prediction about price, when I say the Bitcoin price is too low, you don't know if that's actually true until the future. Because when you say the Bitcoin price is too low, you could be correct that the Bitcoin price is too low, which would suggest that your whatever model you're using to price Bitcoin also suggests that the Bitcoin price is too low, and so that proves it correct. But alternatively, the Bitcoin price could be perfectly correct and your model is wrong, and so you're kind of saying whenever you talk about the price of something and what it should be, you're kind of making two statements, one about the correctness of the price and one about the or two hypotheses. One about the hypothesis about what the price should be, and one hypothesis about what the model of your price prediction that produces your price prediction being correct. And you can't and you can't know until after. So if someone calls a bubble on something or anything like that, you don't really know until after. And so you have these kind of dual hypotheses. He says here, it sums it up a little better than I did in one sentence here. He says, the market could be inefficient or your model could be incorrect. And so when you're making statements about the market like that, those are basically the two options, and you don't know until after whether which is the case, whether the market is inefficient or your model is incorrect. Because the market could be correct and your model could be incorrect, or the market could be inefficient and your model could be correct, but you don't really know until time has had its say. Anyway, I just thought it's a little bit hard to wrap around this kind of like binary thing. But I thought it was good. This is good stuff. I learned something.
Yeah. Gray Ruby had the top comment. He said, I have a hard time scoring the efficient market hypothesis with the current market dynamic of prices being impacted greatly by passive flows. If you have large buyers at any price whose capital outweighs that of sellers and shorters, how can the market be efficient? Simple Sacker says, I think anytime someone says the market is or isn't efficient, I want to ask them how they define efficient. There are tons of underlying assumptions that I think need to be examined. Gray Ruby said, I am defining based on the market ability to accurately price based on current information, expected future events. Cool. Yeah. What was that other post you had this week? You posted something about the energy thing. I thought that was fascinating. I had never seen that before, about the energy charts, about how like one charts, like the America's energy consumption is going down in relation to China. Did you remember that one? Did you see that?
Yeah. It was a post in Econ, I believe. Let me see if I can
find that. Fascinating one.
That was a few. I'm sharing so much shit these days. Man, how much stuff have I? Okay, The Half-Life of Empire is what it's called.
Yeah, I see it.
There. And
that one blew my mind. That was the one where I looked at, I was like, oh, wow, like the United States is in for a rude awakening.
Yeah. So to describe the post, an economist, you can basically, all empires die is the historical story. Or they basically fall out of relevance to the point where they might effectively are dead. But right now the United States is like a world empire. It is the empire of the world. We have the world reserve currency, and Ray Dalio talks a lot about this stuff. But this economist in particular, Ray Dalio has like eight variables that he uses to describe whether an empire is present and whether they are the world power. And he describes like the order of all nations in this empire hierarchy as the world order. Anyway, this economist, rather than using eight variables, collapses it to one and says we can basically look at this from the perspective of share of global energy consumed. And so he does that with Britain here. And I don't know if he's modeled it with other nations, that might be helpful. But he does it with Britain and, measure and basically shows their peak of world energy consumption, and then shows where it begins fall, and then it begins falling off. And that's, roughly when they lost their dominance and the United States came in to be dominant. And when the United States came in to be dominant, they had the largest share of world energy consumption. And so that's the next chart in my post there. And then later on, he charts the United States compared to China. And it turns out that I think it was roughly around the year 2009, China started consuming a larger share of world energy than the United States did.
It's crazy. 1971 is when it clipped off. for China, literally.
Golly, oh, it took off. Man.
Yeah. Dang, dude. I wonder if Bitcoin mining and AI can fix that.
Probably. That's what a lot of people think. That's what a lot of people think. I don't
know if that's going to move the needle enough, though.
China's not really doing any public Bitcoin mining right now. I'm sure there's tons of illegal, you know, quote unquote illegal mining, or the government is mining going on there, but they're certainly doing AI stuff, and they're doing a pretty good job at it. So I don't buy that.
Yeah. It's crazy. Anyways, that was the one that blew my mind when I saw that. And then the other one that you had was Bitcoin is for criminals.
Yeah, this is a site that Jason B created. I thought it was awesome because, you know, like a lot of no coiners are, you know, make this assertion, or pre coiners make the assertion that Bitcoin is for criminals. And Jason B kind of leans into it and creates a website about all the quote unquote or Bitcoin criminals. And, you know, it's basically freedom fighters who are using Bitcoin, who needed Bitcoin to do what they did. And, I think it'll get people to think twice about the label criminal as it applies to someone who uses Bitcoin. And then he has like Edward Snowden, Julian Assange, Alex Navalny, people who have accepted Bitcoin in some fashion or another and used it for its censorship resistance, to, you know, fight a freedom fight of some kind. And then he has at the bottom historical figures, who he assumes would also probably make use of Bitcoin were they still alive, or functioning as a revolutionary. Who we all, you know, kind of agree are good people. So I think it's an awesome website and pretty cool.
Yeah. Pretty cool. Pretty cool stuff. Darth Coin had the top comment says, what did he say? We are not the same something. Okay. I had some good exchanges with Darth over this week. He's super into the Andor show, apparently. I don't know if you have you seen the Andor show?
I saw the first season. I liked it a lot. The second season was meh, I think. We watched Andor Vacation. Yeah.
He's really into it.
He's into Star Wars.
Yeah. The one I had was the Is It Weird That People Don't Revolt During Hyperinflation? This was one from Stack Harder. He was talking about the hard boiled egg index. And let me see if I can share this one here. So this is the one that's about this book. I'm going to check it out. He has it on Amazon, but it's about the Zimbabwe hyperinflation and how people survived it. He said it's a short read, that it's not that long. So right up my alley. But he talks about just how, like, people basically just, you know, they just inflated away the debt. And you know, they had to reintroduce like this new currency and just about the devaluation of everything and just the increasing prices of everything. And I just thought it was super fascinating, and I want to check it out. But it's all in relation to what's going on here in the States. And he was just kind of talking about like what happens, or why haven't people revolted yet. And he was asking the stackers, and the top comment was from AKG. He said, there are many factors that influence this, one of them being education. He said, I'm from Venezuela, currently mirrored in a narco dictatorship, and not to mention its shocking hyperinflation. He says, currently, if their humiliated currency bolivars were to have the zeros they've removed to supposedly disguise or hide the devaluation added to it, it would be something like this. And then he has, I don't know if that's like, what is that, 1 quadrillion? That would be the figure. He goes, and no one cares or rebels because they're ignorant of what's happening. Very few have basic education, much less someone to teach them financial education or even what Bitcoin is, something regrettable, but that's how it is. And Crew was the second one. He says people don't even revolt during the 2020-2021 lockdowns. So it's obvious that humanity is either entirely composed of two categories, evil tyrants or evil NPCs who obey them. Good people who were eliminated through evolutionary natural selection at some point in the past. Yeah, what do you think it is? I think it's more of like a boiling frog type of thing that Crypto Sensei says. I think it's more like people just get boiled slowly over decades. And I actually think it takes like one, you know, child to get like, you know, hurt or something before people actually really revolt. I think that's what it takes. It's like somebody of like, you know, something that like actually hurts everybody, like, you know, some innocent lamb, you know. I think that's what causes revolutionary change, you could say.
Yeah, I actually don't. So I think what happens in most of these cases is that the government effectively denies blame, or like they avoid getting blamed for inflation like this. So, and instead what happens is a populist leader rises and points everyone's attention externally rather than internally toward the government, where it maybe belongs for inflation. And so that's why the decline of empire is usually associated with war. Is there's a lot of tension building up inside of countries when they're having rampant inflation and there are economic problems. And so what the leaders begin doing is, you know, sort of blaming other countries for these problems going on inside of it. And then we go to war with those countries. And so I think that's, you know, basic, you know, it is there's a revolt. A revolt is like sort of internal, and a war is like an external revolt. We're scapegoating. We're scapegoating another country for the problems we created on our own. So I think that's why we don't see hyperinflationary revolts. I mean, you can look at like Weimar, the Weimar Republic, and hyperinflation there, and that's basically what led to Hitler. More, you know, was the inflation that happened in Germany post World War One, and then you have, I don't know what happened in Zimbabwe, but I would guess likely there was an external conflict around the time that they hyperinflated, but I don't know. I haven't. Maybe this book would let us know.
Yeah. How do you think it's going to play out here in the States? We haven't had one of these talks in a while.
Yeah.
Or you just kind of, you don't know yet. It's too early.
It's pretty early, but I think we go to war with China eventually. I think that's pretty much the crash course that we're on right now. We're already in a trade war with them. Maybe we don't have much of a kinetic war anymore. Maybe it's all information war. Maybe it's, you know, we're sending drones, fleets of drones at each other, and they're blowing each other up over the oceans or something. But I suspect that's what happens. That's usually what happens. You know, we went to war with Britain when we took over empire from them. But China will go to war with us to take empire from us.
Who would be our allies, though, if we went to war with China, though? Because I guess China would I guess China and the Soviet or the Russia would be allies, wouldn't they?
Yep, China's basically been making allies around the world for the last century, almost in preparation for this moment where, you know, they're building, rather than like going to war in other countries, they're building roads and infrastructure for them. I forget what it's called, but it's like. It's like something someone wrote about it a while ago, but it's like the, you know, Silk Road 2.0, more or less, where they're going around and building roads all through Latin America. And so China's allies are basically everyone except for the United States and Europe, but we're not really exactly friendly with Europe at the moment. And maybe that gets worse. Maybe it gets better. I don't know.
I think we have really hard times ahead in America. Like in the next 3 to 5 years, like really hard times. I'm not talking about just like, I'm talking about like really hard times ahead. And I think the sign was, so the Pope got, the Pope's American, And before all this, everybody was saying that there's just no way the Pope will be American, just because it just would have never happened. Like, it would, I mean, obviously Pope Francis was from Latin America, but like an actual American, United States American, like, I think that's a sign that we have like some really hard times ahead. And I think you're right. Maybe there is like some really hard times coming for us. I just don't, I'm just really surprised that, no one's kind of sounding the alarm on this kind of stuff yet. I don't want to scare people, but, it's coming. You can kind of feel it in a lot of ways. I don't know.
I don't really agree. I don't agree that it'll be, I mean, that if you look at the past situations where the empire is handed off and there are these like economic problems and stuff, it's usually not super bad. It's bad for 10, 20% of the population, which is horrible that anything happened to them at all. But, most of the world, the life goes on, and people in, B-57 was in Venezuela getting gasoline, and they had a bunch of crap go, you know, they've had crap for decades there. It's been, you know, they've been having tons of problems there forever. Or not forever, but for a very long time. And life still goes on. You can still fill up your car with gasoline. There were a lot of modern cars in that line in that video.
No, I mean, I don't mean like that. I just mean like, I think military bases, I think more like China and will be fighting America just with drones. I think there'll be more drone to drone type of combat. And I can just see America losing a lot of military bases across the world. I don't think we're going to be the military powerhouse like we once were. I can see that happening is what I'm kind of saying.
Yeah. Like doomy.
That's a lot of American lives lost if that happens. That's kind of where I'm coming from. I'm not saying we're not gonna have groceries or something like that. I'm saying like lives, like human lives are gonna be lost. That's kind of where I'm coming from. Yeah.
Okay.
Anyways, cool. Okay. I think that's everything that we have for the show. Let's jump into the top stackers. The top Cowboys. Let's see what we have here. We have one stacker in Heidi. We got Ucube next. We got Undisciplined. Undisciplined's number three. I guess he's been number three for a while. 117. Blockchain Boog. Number five. Gray Ruby, number six. We got two stackers in hiding.
I can't.
Number seven and eight. We got Den, number 13. EK, number 18. Max Webster, number 25. Hey, what happened to me? Oh, I'm 36 now. How did I go down? Thought I was up there. 6 days. How did I lose my cowboy hat?
I don't know. You got a notification when you lost it.
That's bull crap. I had 11 days the last week. There's no way I lost it. I'm calling a recount. And then Peter Todd. Actually, wow, Peter Todd's 5 days and going. Hydrid Bits, Kepford, Elvis Mercury, Jason B. Any cowboy hat standing out for you here? Jessifer. Oh, wow. Jessifer's here.
Yeah. I think they just released a product, so he came by to promote it. I don't know.
Meta David.
Good seeing Now. I haven't heard from Now in a while.
Yeah. Justin Shocknet. OG Stacker. Cool. Yeah, that's all the Cowboys there. Let's jump into the fountain. Looks like Bob the Cow said, listening to Stacker News reminds me of frolicking through the meadows of the Irish countryside back in my youth. Not sure what that means. I don't know what that means. What does that even mean?
I don't think, I think it's just nice. It's just nice to think about.
Is he saying he's a cow? Is that what he's saying? Or is he saying like,
no, humans can frolic in a valley.
Okay. Okay. I was picturing him as a cow frolicking, as an Irish cow. What does frolicking even mean though?
I think it means like kind of gleefully walking, you know, like kind of joyously walking.
Okay. And then
kind of leaping a little bit.
Leaping. And then EK says, or Blockchain Book says, EK comes up from out of the shadows. Well, here you go. It was funny last week. EK was so nervous coming on Snack News Live. He was like, I think I'm going to come out on the show. And I was like, really? He's like, yeah. And he kept talking to me about it. Like he was psyching himself up for it. It was, did you watch the show last week, Keon?
I did not watch. I haven't watched it yet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe don't watch it.
Yeah, maybe don't.
Yeah. Maybe don't watch it. Yeah. It was chaos. It was absolute chaos. There was one person that says it was the best show that we've ever made. I was like, I don't know about that. I think the one we did in Nashville was probably the best show.
Hmm.
Anyways.
We've had some good ones. Half the good ones weren't, I was gone on vacation, but yeah.
Blockchain Book said test. I guess he's making an app or something. Cool. Hmm. That's all the stories that we have today. That's all the show today. Keon, what are you doing this weekend?
I don't really know. I mean, I'm a little bit behind on work stuff, so probably do that now that the conference is over. I'll probably go tonight to check out the hackathon project. They're doing a really cool hackathon. I guess what they're doing is it's sort of like a science fair where they have like 10 judges who go around with clipboards and everyone sets up in a hall, like sort of like in a science fair, and they present their projects kind of one in a hall like that. So I'm curious what people are building. I'll probably do that. Otherwise, I don't really have any plans. How about you, Carr?
Oh, I'm going to go hang out with my mom for a little bit and then have dinner with my sister and her family. But yeah, it's going to be good. Just chilling, dude. Chilling.
That sounds nice.
In vacay mode. There's this cool like surf and turf place here in town. So we're going to go out there tonight. Probably drink a couple Coronas, you know, enjoy the beach life. So it's pretty good weather outside right now. So I'm going to go do that. But yeah, that's pretty much it. And then I'll come back hopefully Sunday. Yeah.
Beautiful. That sounds great. Well, I hope you enjoy it.
Yeah. It feels good to be home for a little bit, even if it's just for Mother's Day. But cool. Tell everybody I said hi, and I'll be back there hopefully soon.
All right.
Cool. Stackers, have yourself a great weekend. Go out there and frolic in the Irish countryside. Keon.
Zap.